Welcome to Civil Defense Radio with your host, Preston Schlankhofer, where we talk about all things civil defense. Civil defense is about building community resiliency by becoming better informed, prepared, and organized to meet whatever disaster might affect you, your neighborhood, and your community. There are many threats on the horizon, yet we cannot rely on true and accurate media coverage of many of these issues. These threats are propagated from the mainstream media seeking to tell only one side of the story. In fact, this propagation can even be considered biased propaganda. This is a legitimate threat to you, your family, and our nation, and here on Civil Defense Radio, we seek the facts that others leave out. Remember, your tomorrow may depend on today's preparedness. Now, here is your host, Preston Schlankhofer.
Hello, friends. Welcome to Civil Defense Radio. I am your host, Preston Schlankhofer, coming to you from the Strategic Command and Control Center deep within the Civil Defense Radio bunker. We have an outstanding program for you today, one in which may scare many who haven't been keeping up with the threats from China because of all the troubles in Afghanistan and elsewhere. There is just so much to keep up with. That's why I am here, and so are you. So now, I want to introduce our guest. Our guest today is David Pine, Deputy Director and National Operations and Congressional Liaison for the EMP Task Force on National and Homeland Security. Today, we're going to be talking about the buildup of Chinese missile field for hundreds of new ICBMs. So, David, welcome to Civil Defense Radio.
Thanks. Thanks for having me on.
It's our pleasure. This article came about from an email that was going around with our task force. But before we get to that, can you give us a little snapshot of your bio so that the listeners can have an idea who you are?
Yeah, you bet. So I am a former U.S. Army officer. I served as an armor officer for a few years back in the 90s, and then I served as a U.S. Army headquarters staff officer as a civilian from 2000 to 2003, and I was in charge of military R&D cooperation for the former Soviet Union, Eastern Europe, Middle East, the Americas, and Africa. I had a really, really broad portfolio, and the reason for that is we weren't doing a whole lot of cooperation other than maybe the Middle East with a lot of those countries. I also worked for the U.S. Missile Defense Agency and in the Office of Secretary of Defense and for the Department of the Navy during my time in Washington, D.C. I've got a BA in political science, Juris Doctor, doctorate, and master's in National Security Studies from Georgetown University. And I've been published on a number of different websites and newspapers, major sites across the country. My expertise is in military history, national security policy, and nuclear weapons, and missile defense, and also policy issues in general, and political analysis.
That gives you plenty of street cred to be talking about this issue with China and their new ICBM missile field, doesn't it?
Yeah, I like to think so. it's a crazy time. Obviously, Russia and particularly China are breaking out of, I guess China doesn't have any arms control limitation agreements. China is, until earlier this year or last year, was assessed by the Department of Defense to have a number of nuclear weapons only in the low 200s. And with this Bill Gertz article reported in the Washington Times on August 12th, I believe, is going to build up 400 ICBM silos, which are rapidly being constructed and will be completed within 3 years, perhaps sooner. That would give them another 4,000 potentially DF-41 nuclear warheads, all of which would be ready to fire, and that would be an increase of between 1,500 percent and 2,000% in the estimated size of the Chinese nuclear arsenal. That would also give them approximately 6 times more ready to fire warheads than the U.S. currently possesses, and would give them unquestioned and unparalleled nuclear supremacy over us, essentially enabling them to commit international aggressions at will without any worry about a U.S. military response. And that, of course, doesn't even include, you know, Russia. Russia's Bill Gertz has also reported that Russia is building up to 3,300 strategic nuclear warheads that are operationally deployed, and then a total of 8,000, including their theater and tactical nuclear arsenal, which is far, far in excess of our own, probably about 35 times larger.
Wow. And the Russia and China are both, they are in partnership against the West, against us mainly, right?
Yeah, they've, so a lot of people don't realize, and even our policy experts, you know, our self-described national security experts in the country don't really understand the fact that they have been military allies since they signed an alliance agreement in July of 2001, and that was the Shanghai Cooperation Organization. Some of your listeners may know that they've been engaging in a joint military exercise in China involving thousands of Russian and Chinese troops. They have done so, had these kind of joint military exercises for the last few years, and including a recent joint amphibious exercise off the coast of Hawaii, suggesting that in the event of war, they may have a plan to carve up Hawaii between them. So, yeah, they've it's a really dangerous national security environment. And, you know, the bizarre thing is we don't, I have not heard one single think tank, one Republican leader, let alone Democrat leader in Congress, or anyone in the White House say that we need to rebuild our nuclear arsenal to, you know, not even match, but just to try to close the gap a little bit. You know, we had JFK famously gave speeches about the missile gap when he was running for president. That was discussed with Richard Nixon in 1960. And he followed up with that. It was mostly Eisenhower, actually, that that had developed the Minuteman, one ICBM. But JFK actually built them. And at that time, we still had nuclear superiority over the Soviets. And today we're in a completely inverse relationship, with the correlation of forces having shifted decisively against us. We now have two nuclear superpowers allied against us. And according to our top general Admiral Richard, who commands STRATCOM, U.S. Strategic Command, we don't even have any real theory for how we would counter two allied nuclear superpowers in a major war.
That is frightening to think about, even. I'm glad I'm not getting paid to think about that. Jeez, that would keep me up at night if I was trying to figure out that strategy. Let me tell you, that's mind-boggling. But these forces that are building exponentially right now, especially under this administration, because they essentially have a green light to do what they want, because it doesn't seem like there's really much counter what they're doing coming out of this administration. Or am I incorrect?
Well, I think you're probably correct. So the worry that I've had, and a lot of other folks as well have had, is that China and Russia may be able to blackmail the president of the United States. You know, he was elected, you know, with potential massive voter fraud that was not really hardly even looked at, and any attempts to investigate it have been stopped by the Democrats at the state level, the various battleground states, which he purportedly may have stolen. And of course, his business ties, what he calls the family business, Are predominantly with China, including, I believe, a $1.3 or $1.4 billion contract with his son, Hunter Biden, and various other family-enriching contracts and agreements with other countries, including famously Ukraine, which have served to enrich the Biden family. And then Hunter, as he admitted, has paid at least half or perhaps most of Biden's living expenses over the last several years. So a lot of the stuff, if it were you know, to be fully publicized by China and Russia, could have the effect of causing the downfall of the Biden administration, forcing him to resign or getting him impeached. And so they have they may have the goods on him to enable him to kind of stand by if they were to conduct international aggressions abroad, and perhaps even to further disarm us of our nuclear arsenal. And so that's a very disturbing situation. We've never once had that before. We've had, you know, FDR, of course, and Truman were closely allied with the Soviet Union, the evil Soviet Empire during World War II. And that was a huge strategic mistake that didn't need to happen. We could have defeated Hitler without doing that. But other than that, we've never actually had someone who, you know, who could be blackmailed and heavily influenced, if not controlled, by an enemy power. So it's a troubling situation, and it couldn't happen at a worse time in terms of the strategic implications for what we're facing today.
Yes, you're right. And, you know, just for my friends out there in the listening audience, David Pyne is a historian. He's not a political activist. So if he's saying things, it's because of his learned studies.
Well, actually, I'm a little of both. To admit it, I am I am a Utah Republican Party leader. I was on the state executive committee, and now I'm on the county executive committee. So a little bit of both, but I'm willing to speak historical truths and strategic truths, no matter how negative they may be. So I don't allow politics to get in the way of my strategic analysis.
Yeah, I agree. I try to keep that in check myself. Even though I have strong political beliefs, I believe that they are based upon a lot of information that is gleaned and sifted and analyzed in my pea brain, so that I can understand it and see it through the eyes of analytical content. And that's how I come to my decisions on things. But this buildup of China is very troubling, and the possibility of an American president being blackmailed: if you don't do this, then we will expose you, or if you don't do this, we will send our superior nuclear force your direction. I mean, the Chinese are waiting for the opportunity to just take over Taiwan. And, you know, I think they've also sent a few messages to Japan as well. Am I correct in that?
You are. And especially with regards to Japan, it's been their messages have been unprecedented in terms of their boldness and threat level. They threatened to, if Japan were to send one single soldier, one single plane or one single ship to help defend Taiwan in the event of a Taiwanese military conflict, they threatened to nuke Japan repeatedly and then invade and occupy China and carve up China into five different countries.
You mean invade Japan?
Yes. Sorry. Yeah. Invade Japan and divide Japan into five different states. And I believe I take that as a veiled threat against the U.S. as well. That if we, you know, without actually having come out and said that, they're basically saying if the U.S. dares intervene, we will nuke you continuously. We'll EMP and cyber attack you continuously, so that, you know, they defeat us and then are able to to occupy us at will. And you of course have been a great leader in the EMP task force predating myself, you know, back when I joined as a state director when you were Eastern Regional Director, and you still are. So I appreciate all you've done to help inform and enlighten people about the threat that we're facing from EMP attack that's really existential and nation threatening.
Well, thank you. It's been a passion of mine since I retired. You know, I've just recently, in the last 3 years, had this podcast that has given me a voice to express some of the things that I've learned and things that I'm still learning. You know, the task force is a great organization that helps take this information to local and state leaders and try and get a common sense protection of our electrical grid and other areas as well. But it seems like certain places are harder to gain access, especially during this pandemic that we got going on. There's always excuses of not being available.
Yeah. I wanted to go back to answer your question on Taiwan. So Taiwan is a little more nuanced issue for me because for the last 20 years during, you know, the U.S. has kind of war gamed how a U.S. Chinese conflict over Taiwan would likely go. And U.S. forces have consistently lost in each of those war games, as well as war games over, I think, the Baltics and Ukraine with Russia. And so it's in a situation where our enemies have clear nuclear superiority over us, and I would add EMP and cyber superiority. Our options in terms of strategy, national security strategy, are much more limited. And it's very important that we do not try to, you know, overextend ourselves and fight, risk fighting a nuclear EMP war with Russia and China that risk the lives of 90% of our population. And so for that reason, I believe that it would be in the U.S. national security interest for President Biden to tell both the Russians and the Chinese, as well as the Taiwanese and Ukrainians, that the U.S. will not intervene militarily in the event of any Chinese war over Taiwan or a Russian military conflict with Ukraine and the Baltics. And I think that would provide us with increased national security. Obviously, that would only kind of buy us some time, essentially, to rearm in our nuclear arsenal, as well as to harden the grid against EMP attack and build a comprehensive national missile defense system. And those are issues that I cover in Dr. Peter Pry, our executive director's upcoming book, Blackout Warfare, in the conclusion. I'm also being published in the National Interest, nationalinterest.com, I believe, is where you'll be able to find that. But the article series that I published, that I'm going to publish, or been requested to publish, will not come out until after the book is published, in early September, we're hoping.
We've had a lot of discussions back and forth within the group, the task force, about various subjects and the various chapters of this book. It's been very enlightening to see some of these things discussed, and, you know, with all the different experts that we have that have insight into various aspects of defense and national security. It's been a great learning experience. I look forward to the book coming out in its entirety for everybody to be able to read. And it will be a valuable national security primer, I think, for many. The EMP threat is something that we've talked about on this show a lot with various guests. And it is something that is going to be a huge threat for a long, long time, because we don't have our national grid secure in any way, especially with the 300 new high voltage transformers that have been introduced or ready to be introduced into our grid that have been ordered in the last year and a half. So we're looking at huge vulnerability, and almost all these things have back doors that the Chinese can get into.
Yeah, I mean, the cyber war threat, I would say, is the most likely mode of attack that we'll next see. I think our cyber vulnerabilities, would enable the Russians, the Chinese, and likely the North Koreans to shut off our internet, shut off our electric power, and potentially even blind our military early warning satellites, enabling them to, conduct further attacks against the U.S. and its allies without us even knowing about it. And they could potentially do that, in the case of a cyber EMP attack, which could really shut down the country and cause a lot of people to, to starve and go without emergency services and, shut down the food and water distribution systems. It's just a huge vulnerability, and it can be done either through a cyber attack or an EMP attack. And I've said potentially it could be done within minutes or even with a kind of a flip of the proverbial switch. So we've never faced that kind of threat. Obviously in World War II, we were the whole U.S. homeland other than Hawaii and, the Aleutian Islands were never threatened by the Axis forces. And then we have this new Axis, which is formed against us, Russia and China, that could, destroy us in so many different ways. It's really kind of scary.
Well, I've talked with somebody else on this show, and we've learned that the Chinese and Russians have already divvied up the United States. All we have to do is have a crisis big enough here, and they start landing forces. They have a huge lift capability. At least the Chinese have one lot larger than what they would need for their territorial ambitions there. But they need more land to grow crops. And so they're strategically looking at taking over a good portion of the Midwestern part of the United States.
Yeah, that's an absolute reality. Obviously, they've had those plans since at least the 1990s. I think it was reported by a Russian defector, a Soviet defector. Not until recently have they, looked at those plans realistically and said, yeah, we might be able to actually implement them, given their superiority to us in virtually every area of military strategic, warfare and comparison. And it's interesting. There's still some people that claim to be national security analysts that claim that, China doesn't have enough amphibious forces to invade Taiwan, which is only, 100 miles or less away from their shores. But in fact, as you point out, and there has actually been some articles have reported that when questioned about their amphibious capabilities and exercises, one or more Chinese soldiers replied, "We're not preparing to invade Taiwan. We're preparing to invade the west coast of the United States of America." So, those reports may not be properly cited, but there's certainly a strong possibility that the Chinese are considering doing that in the not so distant future. And U.S. leaders just really have no clue. They have no, Congress is focused on, multi-trillion dollar spending bills, Green New Deal, critical race theory, non-existent racism in the country, all kinds of threats that really are just meant to, even the January 6th riot commission, just all kinds of things that are kind of keeping our eye away from the ball and making us willfully blind to the existential threats we're facing today.
Yeah, I think it's by design, a lot of it. But what they're doing with a lot of the policies that are coming out now is essentially going to turn half this nation or more into domestic right-wing extremist terrorists. Anybody who believes that the election was stolen or that COVID is, you know, bogus and the vaccine is deadly. Now, those are big strikes against you and heavy strikes, according to some of the documents that have been produced by this administration. So we have a lot of trouble here in this nation. You know, if we do devolve into separate nation states, like I've suggested a number of times, because of our internal politics, then it'll make it a lot easier for China to attack the West Coast, which they have friendly ports there in California and Oregon right now, and possibly even Seattle. So who knows what's going on behind closed doors out there on the West Coast and the leftists in charge.
I was just gonna add to your point that the Chinese have had a policy since the 1990s of buying up our ports, our strategic resources, our high-tech dual-use military companies. Hunter Biden was actually involved in, you know, helping to facilitate the sale, as well as the Obama-Biden administration, to sell a U.S. company that had classified stealth aircraft technology. They've been buying massive amounts of our farmland. You know, so it's exactly what you're saying. They've bought up a lot of our country with the approval of U.S. leaders that have had this unilateral free trade theology that has really caused the outsourcing of much of our high-tech manufacturing capability to China and enabled them to outpace us both in terms of industrial manufacturing might, but also in terms of their GDP being much larger than ours.
Yeah. David, in the next 3 minutes, can you give us an insight into our current U.S. strategic nuclear forces and how dilapidated they are and why there needs to be a rush to modernize and build up our triad?
Yeah, so
I know it's a big order, 3 minutes.
Yeah, with regards to our Minuteman III ICBMs, some of them are as old as 50 years old, literally over half a century old. So those have been, you know, in need of replacement for decades. And we've just, I was actually working for a company that helped to, modernize those in terms of, you know, just helping ensuring their lifetime was extended. And then our Trident missiles are the most modern. So those don't need to be replaced, but the submarines, the Ohio nuclear missile submarines do, because their whole life is about, 30 to 35 years. And we simply, both the Minuteman ICBMs and Ohio nuclear missile submarines will literally just, they'll be forced to retire, or we won't even know if they'll work in the case of the Minuteman III ICBMs, where, you know, their ability to function at this point is somewhat in doubt by the admission of Admiral Richard during the April 2021 Senate Armed Services Committee hearings. And then in addition to that, we haven't tested any nuclear weapons for 29 years. President George H.W. Bush put in a nuclear testing moratorium that we've continued to the present day. And we haven't built enough tritium gas, which is absolutely necessary in order to ensure the reliability of our nuclear warhead stockpile. I actually met with the administrator, the Nuclear Security Administration administrator, back in 2003. And I guess what I wanted to say before we close out this interview is I believe that the U.S. global war on terror will be considered the Stalingrad of the Second Cold War, because due to our being bogged down in the Middle East and, you know, wasting trillions of dollars that could have been used, in Afghanistan alone, the estimate is $2.2 trillion, which if we had been able to use that to build ABMs that could shoot down incoming nuclear missiles, we could literally buy 75,000 ABMs. We could have hardened the entire critical infrastructure against EMP attack. We could have built brand new nuclear missiles and modernized our conventional military as well. So we've essentially skipped a generation of modernization while Russia and China have modernized their militaries, both conventionally and nuclear as well. And then in terms of our nuclear bombers, those were taken off 24-hour strip alert back in 1991. So for 30 years, we've had a situation where they could be easily destroyed with, we have three nuclear bomber bases left. You know, as Peter Pry has stated, Dr. Pry, only three nuclear warheads would be necessary to destroy our entire nuclear bomber fleet. So there's a lot of policy changes that I'm recommending in blackout warfare that I think would be very useful for us to pursue. And, in terms of expanding, not just modernizing, but expanding our nuclear arsenal to be much larger than it is right now, we could do that with the 2,000 nuclear warheads we have in reserve. But it would take 6 to 24 months from a presidential order in order to accomplish that. And then, building our ABMs to at least 3,000, currently we have 44 ABMs in Alaska, and perhaps a few in at Vandenberg Air Force Base as well. But in terms of our Aegis, the SM-3, Block 2A are the best ABMs we have right now, and we can readily deploy those. We have some already, but we can build a lot more of those on our Aegis cruisers and destroyers. We have, I believe, 60 cruisers and destroyers capable of fielding and launching those ABMs. And that, so we could do that at as little as $90 billion.
So the war on terror has essentially been the squirrel that the dog has been chasing instead of guarding the hen house.
Yeah, I mean, it was considered that way. That was really the whole purpose of Bin Laden's attacks on the U.S. was to get us to fight there. Send our troops there so he could build up his terrorist forces in the Middle East. And, Iran helped Al-Qaeda conduct those attacks. And, of course, we destroyed Iraq, which was an Iranian enemy that we could have used to fight the war on terror by proxy, which we actually did. Reagan did that from 1983 to 88. There's a lot of different things we could have done to without actually, sending U.S. forces to occupy and invade other countries in the Middle East at the cost of trillions of dollars and, thousands of U.S. lives, 6,000 alone in Afghanistan.
Yeah, yeah. Well, David, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. And hopefully we'll get you back when the book comes out. Maybe get you and Dr. Pry on at the same time, and we'll have a big discussion about the book. And hopefully the national security environment will be a little safer between now and then.
Yeah, we can only hope.
Yeah, it's going to be a prayer every day,
Yep.
But thanks again.
Well, thank you. Appreciate it.
Civil defense equals resiliency equals survival. The top-down governmental approach to solve our community resiliency problem has failed us. We need a community-based grassroots approach to solve this problem. To be resilient, it takes preparation, organization, and training to meet the needs of whatever situation we may find ourselves in. Civil defense helps reduce panic in a disaster, and this is why we strongly recommend establishing a community-based civil defense organization in your city or county in partnership with your local emergency manager and community leaders. Let's start a conversation with the guide found on our resources page at civildefenseradio.com. And also, please check out our regular postings on Facebook at Civil Defense Radio and on Telegram at Civil Defense Radio Channel, and some at MeWe at Civil Defense Radio, and my derelict YouTube channel is Civil Defense Radio Channel. So most of the items that we post are important information about the many threats that we see to our safety and security as a nation. However, when I find something funny, I'll post that as well. So please consider this information and use it wisely. I wish to thank David Pine again for being with us, and I wish to thank you, our friends and listeners all around the world, who are with us on a regular basis. I really appreciate you being with us this week. So please, be safe, be informed, be prepared, and may God bless you and keep you until next time.